We are back again, week 7 college football. Brent Rollins joining me again, like always. And Brent, we ain't topping last week, bro. Like, that was fantastic. Something that's never happened, by the way, in our lifetime. Since we've been alive, have we ever seen four top 11 teams go down to ranked opponents? But this week, it's kind of cool, too, because the Red River rivalry SEC style, I think that's going to be fun, a fun little twist. The Buckeyes going to Autzen Stadium, which is cool. We've never seen, like, so I think it's, you know, six ranked teams on the road. There's still a recipe for a lot of fun this week in college football, just like every week. But last week, obviously, was pretty dang cool, and I'm not sure we're getting that again.
It's going to be hard to beat that, but at least you get to see the biggest contenders for the most part in the sport kind of battle each out. We've looked at some of these games over time, and now it's time to see the heavy hitters go against each other. But first, I wanted to ask you a little bit of trivia, a little current college football trivia, because I think it speaks to the uniqueness of this season a little bit. So first,
back on college game day, you're going to break out the $100 bill like Reese always did, or what?
I mean, I don't really have one right on my person. I can walk it next door if you get these right. If you get these right, I will walk you a C-note next door.
Okay.
All right. So, current first place teams in the Power Four conferences. Big Ten. Who's the first place in the Big Ten?
Big Ten, Indiana.
Indiana, check. Okay. SEC.
A&M.
A&M, check. Big 12.
Are you getting nervous now, by the way?
No.
Okay. Big 12. I want to say BYU. That's the first thing that comes to my brain. I'm going BYU.
Texas Tech.
Dang it!
They're 3-0. They're the only one that's played three games. And then ACC.
Clemson.
Clemson is 3-0 in the ACC.
Yeah, so I was the Red Raiders away from a C note, man.
I mean, I'll keep my hundo. And also, we got 12 remaining undefeated teams. Three that are non-power four: Army, Navy, Liberty, which survived this week. And then the Power Four teams. So we got BYU, Indiana, Iowa State, we'll talk about later, Miami, Penn State, we'll talk about, Pitt, Texas, and then Ohio State and Oregon, which leads us to the first big game. So just the uniqueness of this season. By the way, I only mentioned one SEC team, and that's Texas. So, like, it's a fun season. It's a crazy season. And you add the 12-team playoff to it, we might see this game we're about to talk about multiple times.
Yeah, and I think that's crazy. You know, I think the proposition, you know, we've seen Georgia-Bama several times, and the proposition of seeing it a third time is crazy to me. It's kind of foreign. I can't even imagine it yet. Like, I can't fathom it yet. I know it's possible, but what a showdown, man. I think Dan Lanning's team has trended up. You know, they've definitely, you know, gotten better. You know, when I watched Oregon and when I've been watching them this season, the offensive line has been, started the season really rough, really rocky, and I don't think they knew who they were, and I think they had to change who they wanted to be. And if you've watched Dillian Gabriel the last, you know, couple weeks, man, I don't know that there's a quicker trigger in college football, Brent. Like, he has a unique ability, even when he scrambles. Like, he's just got it is a flick of the wrist. By the way, Texas fans will remember last year when he was at OU and he's down there near the goal line and I don't even think he saw the receiver and knew where he was, but he just flicks his little left-handed wrist and it goes and he puts it in the right spot, and he's going to have to be great. And the biggest matchup when they have the ball, Brent, to me is the interior for Ohio State. It's Hamilton and Williams, who are both really good defensive tackles, physical, they can make plays. And those guys against, to me, the weakness of Oregon's offense, which is the interior of the offensive line. And I don't think Oregon's going to be able to push them around and run the football like they did a couple years ago. Remember when they went to the Shoe and beat them? By the way, that wasn't too long ago.
No.
But on that side of the football, Dillian Gabriel's feet will be a big deal. When they get in the red zone, they use his feet a lot. Another thing, too, I love about Oregon is their play design. Like, they've got great play design. Like, they're going to have a couple of plays that manufacture big plays in the passing game. And it's fun to watch with their false pulls and their all the different stuff that they'll accomplish. And And I think Dylan Gabriel's, he's got a knack, Brent, for big games, and he's been really good in big games. And he gonna have a big one this week.
Watch, I agree with the sort of the uniqueness of their offense, but it's also, there's still too much of an east-west component. I mean, like if you look at even just target share, the slot receiver, 15, Johnson, he has 52 targets. The wide receivers are in like the 20s, the low 20s. So it's not like you're getting, it's still east-west. So, and really both teams for that matter, Ohio State a little bit has some of that element, at least in the passing game. It's which team to me can really get vertical, get north-south in this game, create big plays. And obviously Ohio State has 1, 2, and 4 in Judkins, Egbuka, and Jeremiah Smith that make the difference there for when they're on offense.
Well, and I tell you what, I want to do this now before Ohio State becomes possibly the number one team in the country this week. When I look at Ohio State and I look at their team, I don't see a hole. Like, I think I can really poke holes in almost every team in the country. And the only other team that I'm going to put in this category, I think, to me, it's Ohio State and Texas. Before the season, it was Georgia and Ohio State. Now it's Texas and Ohio State. But, like, I love to look at things from a defensive lens, and I go, how would I stop this offense? Okay, if I've got a great front seven and I'm trying to stop Ohio State, well, I got to stop Judkins. I got to stop Henderson. You talked about Abuka, 2 and 4, Jeremiah Smith out wide. There's a lot of things to stop, man. It's not just one. So if my front seven's really good, I can get the plus one in the run game too with my big old hoss of a quarterback that's a good athlete in Will Howard. And if you want to play more guys near the line of scrimmage, well, I got Abuka and I got Smith who can both beat one-on-one coverage, who are both big playmakers. And Smith, if you want to single team him, do that at your own risk, but he's going to body you up and make plays. And I put a system on top of this with Chip Kelly, that this is an awesome system where they're running counter and they're giving you play side. They're giving you all the different things to look at, man. I usually can take a team and I can go, okay, this is how I can make them one-dimensional. The only thing I see in Ohio State is the downfield passing. Like, I don't think they're great at it. And I want Will Howard to do that. But Chip Kelly ain't going to about that life, and he ain't going to make him do that. And if he does do it, it'll be when it's a one-on-one situation. So to me, when I watch Ohio State, man, I don't see a scab to pick. I don't see a dude to go, I'm going after. And I'll feel better about their, you know, I'm interested to see their secondary against some good passers, a good passer like Dylan Gabriel and Tez Johnson and Evan Stewart, because I do think they can make some plays maybe in the back end, because Iowa had some chances to make some plays, and I think Ohio State's trending in the right direction, even going to Autzen, which is a tough place to play.
Yes.
And in a tough atmosphere, man. Ohio State's proven to me a lot this season so far.
And you think, hey, because Oregon State, their defensive line is a lot of depth, great pass rushers.
Oregon. Birch.
Yes, Oregon, defensive line. Birch, 1. Mateo,
yep.
Uyunglele, 10. Harmon, 55. Caldwell, 90. Has some Jordan Davis vibes. He's not as tall.
Big boy.
But a big boy who can move and get after it in the pass, as a pass rusher. But you think, okay, well, let's pressure Howard, because he's been really bad when under pressure. Well, he's also been the least pressured quarterback in the Power Four. So,
well,
can you do it? Can you create some turnovers? I don't know.
And if I'm looking at Oregon's defense, Brent, and watching their tapes, you know, here's what I think of the Oregon defense. I think Dan Lanning is elite. I think their system is elite. I think their communication is elite. I don't think you beat them with scheme. I think you beat them with dudes. And what I don't love about their system is I don't love the way they get off blocks on the defensive line. Like, I don't like the way they strike and shed and make plays. And I'll be very interested. I think this is going to be a big running game for Ohio State. I think it's going to be a Judkins game. I think it's going to be a Henderson game. By the way, every game is. I mean, not that that's a surprise, but I do think coming into the season, I'd have been like, you're not going to line up and pound Oregon. And I thought Oregon on the offensive line was going to have one of the best teams in the country this year. And so far, I haven't been overly impressed, to be honest, with the offensive line. And so the line of scrimmage, can Oregon hold up? Which before the season,
against Genty.
Before the season, I thought it was going to be a yes. But exactly, Genty's another game that I watched, and I'm just, we got to get off blocks. We got to make plays. And you know, I think I saw that lacking. So obviously you can tell where I'm leaning in this game, even though, by the way, going across the country is not an easy thing to do. And we've seen that this season so far. Like, we've seen it in the Big Ten, if you want to point to things in the Big Ten. Like, USC went to Michigan, several time zones. You're coming all the way across the country, loss. USC came to Minnesota, loss.
Michigan went to Washington.
Yeah, UM went to Washington last week, a loss. Like, you've seen a lot of this in college football. And listen, that's what you're going to – and by the way, I think it's going to get even weirder because – you're also going to go to Southern California in December and November when it's snowing in Columbus, Ohio, and you might go play USC where it's 70. And that's just weird. So I think more weird is coming in college football. But Oregon, Ohio State, here's one thing we're guaranteed, Brent. We're guaranteed another top three loss this week, right? Because two's playing three, and I think whoever wins this game is probably going to be number one.
I agree. And speaking of things that maybe, you know, a lot of weird, but what is not weird – is Texas playing Oklahoma in Dallas, except it's at 3:30 instead of like noon, and it's now an SEC game. Yep. That's the only weird part.
Yeah,
where are you leaning there?
Yeah, and Oklahoma has been the better team in this series a lot, and that's, I think Texas, you know, that bothers Texas fans, and it should, but it's 7-3 in the last 10, and Oklahoma's had a lot of success, and I would say even when they weren't the better team, they've had success, and kind of this series has been back and forth. But, you know, what's interesting to me about this game is Quinn Ewers coming back, which we think he's coming back. I think he should be the starting quarterback. I don't have any doubt about that. But is there some rust? Because here's what I do know. Anytime you do something day after day after day, every coach will tell you, we're trying to get as many reps as we can to make this thing. It's not, I don't do reps until I get it right. I do reps until I can't get it wrong. Like, that's why we practice ad nauseum so much. And I don't think you have a quarterback controversy because Quinn Ewers has the battle scars. Like, he's been in these games. They're huge games. You trust him to make adjustments, to ride the momentum waves. Arch Manning's going to be a baller. I just think it's going to be Quinn Ewers' show. But if there is some rust with lack of reps,
early struggle,
it's a lot of pressure in the Oklahoma game. Do I start hearing Manning chants? Because that name is a big name. And by the way, he's played great. Like, he's played really, really good. So I'm interested. That's really the only thing I'm interested in when watching in that game, because, man, I don't know how to make a case for OU. I really don't. Like, Michael Hawkins Jr., like, he threw the ball against Auburn 15 times.
Right? Half were screens.
Yes. I mean, he's just not there yet. Is he tough? Yes. Is he a physical runner? Will he make plays? Yes. But, you know, and again, it ain't him. Like, to be very clear, it's not just him. It's the offensive line. It's the receivers. Like, I don't see a lot of great that are helping him out. I don't see – hey, you know, it'd be nice for a young quarterback to go – handoff, lean on my run game. Fake a handoff, run some play action. Like, they can't get the running game going. So I don't know if you can make a case for Oklahoma, but I'm all ears if you can make a case on how they're going to win this game.
The only case is the bye week, that you've got extra reps with the bye week for them. But obviously Texas kind of had the same for the most part. So, but you, the Arch versus Ewers thing, like, their offense is different with Arch in the game.
Bombs away, deep shots.
The depth of target, the percentage of deep shots, way different, way higher than Ewers. The ball's out quick. It's out shorter.
It's on the perimeter more with Ewers. He's better.
No run game, no QB run game. Arch brings a QB run game. Like, there's some different elements that he brings that make their offense to me even more scary.
So let's lay out the scenarios too. Like, first of all, rivalry game, emotions. That's what gives you a chance if you're Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Another thing that gives you a chance is you got a bunch of humpies like me that are saying Texas is going to win. Like, that's going to
give you – nobody believes in us.
Yes, that's going to give you a chance. But let's not forget, too, Venables has a defense that is a bunch of grown men. Like, they stop the run efficiently, and they rush the quarterback. So Texas has kept their quarterback very clean, very little hits. Even at Michigan, they kept – But Quinn Ewers' pocket mobility at Michigan blew me away because his stepping up, making throws, but they also got the ball out quickly on the perimeter. And that's where I think the game changes probably a little bit with Arch versus yours. But so if Oklahoma can muck it up, make it ugly, the quarterback run game can be really, really good. They find a way to – last year, remember, they created turnovers, I think, on two straight possessions, which can you do some of that stuff to muck it up and find a way to win the football game?
Yeah, I agree. Because right now their offense, at least in terms of success rate, it's one of the worst in the country. It's in the – like almost – in the 120s in terms of the FBS. Next up, we go to some late night stuff. Ole Miss at LSU. You think we're going to get 1,343 yards of offense and over 100 points like we got a year ago?
That's crazy. It was crazy. They're still scoring from that game. There's a couple things going in LSU's favor that I don't know if people know yet or not. One, it's a night game. And I'm just telling you, played in it, stupidest thing you've ever seen. Like, literally going to the stadium, Brent, as for a night game in LSU. Let me tell you a few experiences I had. Going to the stadium, got flipped off by grandmas, got mooned, got the bus shaking. Like, you get to the stadium hours before the game, walk on the field right when you get there before you do warm-ups. As you walk out of the visiting locker room, Mike the Tiger scares the bejesus out of you right there in a cage. Student section packed, chanting really nice things to you and your
complimentary fans. Very complimentary.
It was freaking awesome. Like, such an atmosphere. Like, we hit an extra point and they tossed it up to the top of the stadium, threw it out of the stadium. Like, just it's just going to be nuts. It's going to be madness. So that helps LSU. Trey Harris is arguably the best receiver in the country. And dude threw six games. It was something stupid. Has almost 900 yards, and he got hurt last game and didn't finish. Almost 900 yards and five touchdowns. Like, and this dude was a big play machine. Last year, he cooked LSU. He cooked A&M. Like, this dude is one of the best players in the country. Ole Miss has really struggled to make big plays. And he is their guy. He is their go-to guy, their featured guy, and he's out. I don't care what they say. Like, I saw him, something to do with a lower leg. I think it's an ankle. On the sidelines, when I saw him go down, I saw him walk. I'm like, oh, that is not good.
He's questionable on the initial report.
Yeah, I say he's doubtful. I would say he's not playing. And if he
and
does,
that changes things.
If he does, it'd be crazy. And obviously, we've seen, you know, crazier things happen, but LSU at night is a great recipe. We've seen that for years and years. But, man, Brent, when I look at LSU's defense, I don't know how they're going to continue to get stops. Because, Brent, you're a numbers guy. You're a PFF guy. Tell me something good about LSU's defense so far this season. Do you have
They're slightly better at stopping the run than they are at the pass, but they have been really bad at stopping the passing game.
I mean, so
it's not good.
So the answer is no. You can't give me anything that's super positive.
I don't really have any great numbers there.
They don't rush the quarterback great. Harold Perkins, their best pass rusher, is not there with a knee injury. They give up explosive plays in the back end a lot. So, like, it's just if you're LSU, this is not now let's go to the other side. And so I don't talk the whole time. Like, now, LSU's offense, I bet there's a lot of things to like about them and a lot of things that you can point to that you say maybe could pull an upset.
Yeah, well, you protect the quarterback really well.
Yep.
Nussmeier is one of the least pressure quarterbacks in the country. Now you are facing a defensive line that is one of the highest rated in the country with Ivy at Uwe, or the Princely, the Florida transfer.
Yep.
He's questionable, I think, as well. But you got Walter Nolan, who's been dominating the A&M transfer, and some others. Number four, Perkins. They're Perkins. But it's a deep defensive line that Ole Miss has, but you protect the quarterback well. Can you protect the quarterback well enough to hit big plays and create an environment, get a lead, things like that? Yeah. Make them throw the ball.
And we've seen LSU make big plays. We've seen them against USC. We've seen them against an elite pass rush, Brent, in South Carolina, and they struggled mightily to protect the quarterback. Now, I love the way they adjusted their system and attacked the guys flying upfield, but maybe that's one thing that I think people are not realizing across the country. Like, this is not the same Ole Miss teams you've seen in the past, man. The defensive line that Brent just told you about, they can dominate football games. And
yes.
And he also told you that it's not just guys that are flying up the field rushing the passer. Like, they're big physical guys that will stick you in the face, and they're big physical guys that also know how to get upfield. They paid a high premium for this defensive line, bro. Like,
yeah.
And they're good. So that to me, that's the difference in the ball game. I've also seen Nussmeier against LSU, you know, get hit. I've seen him against South Carolina get hit. I think if this was an Ole Miss, it would be a no-brainer. But I think the atmosphere, the environment, and also, man, I also think Ole Miss's offense is lacking that punch. Like, I'm so used to them going so fast and running the football so well and wearing you out and then making those big shots time after time. And I keep seeing those shots, but I keep seeing a miss. And without Trey Harris, so I think some of the stars align for a recipe for an upset, but I'm still taking Ole Miss because of the defense. That's right. We said it out loud. Ole Miss, because of their defense, can win football games, and like we've seen so far this season when they haven't played great on O.
Next one is a Big Ten matchup that was looking a little more high profile, but then USC went and lost at Minnesota. So we got Penn State traveling across the country. Penn State, fourth.
Four.
Ranking now at USC, where – Lincoln Riley is now 5-7 in his last 12 games.
Oof, yeah.
That's not good.
And they look like, you know, listen, let's talk about one of the knocks of Lincoln Riley that we've talked about over the years. Inherited a great program from Bob Stoops, an elite program, elite offensive mind. If you doubt that, you're an idiot. Like, I can't save you. You're blind. You don't watch games. But the one thing I will say about it, the further you got removed from Bob Stoops and his culture and his toughness and physicality on the line of scrimmage, the worse they got on the line of scrimmage. When you look at the offensive line at USC, I don't see what I need to see, man. I see a back that's toting rock and being good. I see Miller Moss and a quarterback that's tough and will make plays. But like, where I need them to be great and make the game easy, I don't see. And you know, the offensive line is not good enough to consistently hold up and keep their quarterback upright. And that's a problem. Like, they had Minnesota beat, man. They were up 7 in field goal range, couldn't protect their quarterback. He gets hit while he's throwing the football. And the game flipped like that. Minnesota runs off 14 straight. The game's over. You know, like, it was kind of nuts. But when I
look at what Penn State's strength is.
Yeah. And listen.
The defensive line.
But you know what? And it wasn't against Bowling Green. You know, last game they came alive, and I love that about them. But I am interested to see them again. What is Penn State doing? Going across the country, who we just talked about, all the inconsistencies in the Big Ten of going across the country. It's not an easy thing to do. But here's the thing. Penn State, big games. Like, well, first let's talk about what I like. Here's what I like, Brent.
Be positive first.
Yeah. First, I want to talk about Colton Ekye. He comes over from Kansas. I love this dude at Kansas. Everybody loved him at Kansas. Created explosive plays at such a high rate. By the way, look at Kansas now. Like, you want to know how good coordinators are? Watch when they leave and all of a sudden a team falls off the cliff. They still got elite talent at Jaden Daniels and company at Kansas. Like, he's still there, and they're gone off a cliff. So, you know, I like the way they scheme up big plays. I like the way I saw Drew Aller last year, Brent, and I watched him look and try to find answers, and he didn't know his answers at time. I watch him now, and I feel like he doesn't get rushed, and he stays in balance, he stays in rhythm, and I like the way he delivers the football, man. Like, I've seen enough to say that hire has paid dividends. But, and listen, I can give you Allen, I can give you Smith, I can give you Warren. Big games, bro. Like, can they run the football? Can they own the freaking line of scrimmage? Because we've seen them against Ohio State, we've seen them against Michigan, and this isn't Ohio State and Michigan, but this is a chance that I really get to see that offensive line, and if you can create holes, because they got a great 1-2 punch at running back. Not good, great. And they open up holes, and they get play action, and the way they attack the the slots in this, in the slots, the way they make big plays out of the slots, the way Warren comes in and does the wildcat, bro. I like it. I love what I'm seeing from Penn State. You know, a couple big stretches come up, but this is a great show me opportunity against USC.
I'll be not as nice. They, high school offense has had more answers than their offense had previously.
Yeah. That a boy. Good. I like you being the bad guy. Sweet.
All right. I'll be the bad guy on that one because that was so frustrating to watch for years on end. Anyway. All right. So next one, we're going to look at, kind of quickly go through some games and mainly just pick one where you think there's a possible upset happening. Because what's interesting about most of these games I'm going to lay out for you is, this, at least from a Vegas standpoint, the spreads are not very large. So you got Utah at Arizona State on Friday night. You got Iowa State going to West Virginia on Saturday night. Florida going to Tennessee. Tennessee looking to bounce back. And then you got K-State on Saturday night going to Colorado. And then a kind of a sneaky one is Arizona at BYU, which, by the way, BYU is the only team that has two wins against current ranked teams, where they beat Kansas State and they beat SMU.
And they beat Kansas State by 30.
Yes.
By the way, BYU, what a story. Like, Cougars, like, you've been the story of college football and what you've been able to do. Like, the preseason win total was like 4 or something. I mean, it was like 4.5, and they're at 5, yeah. Brent. Like, they've already won more games than expected on a season. Quarterback play goes from, you know, really bad in the past to really, really solid. You know, BYU's fun to watch. I think, honest to goodness, there's going to be a couple in there. There's not just going to be one. And the first one I'm going to look at is Arizona State, because I think this is a really good matchup, because Arizona State, the one thing they do well on the defensive side is stop the run. BYU's been very underwhelming, and they are a run-centric team. Now, Cam Rising, I don't know, bro. Like, how many times is he going to dress out and be on the sidelines and go through warm-ups? Like, he changes everything. But Arizona State can run the football. You know, they got a good run.
It's a late Friday night game.
Yeah, Friday night game. Weird things happen. They're the home team. You know, I think there's a good chance that happens. What was the one you stuck out for you? I bet you I could probably win with this one.
I'm going to my home state and the proud West Virginia Mountaineers, because I think it's now or never in a way for Neil Brown. Because, by the way, West Virginia is actually still undefeated in the Big 12. Their losses are to unbeaten Pitt and unbeaten Penn State. And what's interesting about this game, and I think this is, you know, you having a son that plays football, it makes it interesting. Iowa State's quarterback, Rocco Becht.
Oh, yeah.
His dad, Anthony Becht, played a long time in the league, was a West Virginia great, is being put into the West Virginia Hall of Fame at the game on Saturday night.
That is crazy.
While his son plays against the Mountaineers.
I wonder if he's got two changes of clothes then. Surely he's got his West Virginia gear, and then he's
going to change.
And then he's going to change for his kid into his Iowa State gear.
Sure. Plus, by the way, all right, so I got to show you this real quick. Plus, they're wearing these unis.
Those are dope.
The Cold Rush unis.
Those are freaking fantastic. That is a great look.
Saturday night, those unis. Honoring the guy, you're going to beat his kid. I think it just happens for the Mountaineers this time.
Well, I mean, it ain't like they didn't play good a week ago. Like, they played good, and Green, obviously, at quarterback, is a guy that can make plays. And so I'm not against that whatsoever. So I can get down with that.
Okay. All right. So last but not least, we talked about, hey, what can we sort of talk about as it relates to the top 10? And looking sort of forward thinking, what is one thing that these top 10 teams must improve? And you've kind of also kind of previewed it a little bit with two, Texas and Ohio State, that you're not much that you want to see, but we'll go through each top 10 team. One thing they must improve to win a national championship, to get to that type of level. So we'll start at one, Texas. Do you got anything?
Yeah, I think I got the same thing we talked about, but like the QB spot and in health, like Quinier's abdomen. You know, is he okay? Is he good? What that leads to, maybe a divide in the team. Because one thing I can promise you, bro, like, after being on Shockley and Green teams and being on different teams, like, the receivers like certain guys because they're going to get fed. Running backs like certain guys. The upperclassmen, obviously, is usually guys they like the most. But the ones that can feed them, they're like, I can get big numbers with this cat. So I'm kind of here. So does that create anything? I don't think yours or Manning is going to cause it, but no. But sometimes that QB thing can linger and be a deal.
It happens.
That's to me the only thing I see.
I wrote that. Ohio State, I actually wrote an off-field thing with Ohio State as well.
What'd you put?
Does it in a big game, does the OC coach head coach dynamic create some level? Because if you watch Ohio State right now, like I'm watching, I'm like, this is a Chip Kelly offense. This is 100%. Not Ryan Day's offense that Chip Kelly's blended into. It's Chip Kelly's offense. And is there a point in a bigger game where you have some struggle where you get some friction there that maybe you don't want otherwise? But outside of that, like you said, in terms of roster, they probably have the least holes of any roster in the country.
They're dirty. I think the Chip Kelly addition is so huge, and people can talk about or think about Chip Kelly in a light. Chip Kelly built his living on running the football. Like you can talk about the no huddle and the up tempo and all that stuff. It was up tempo running the football. It was power football. It was just at warp speed. And so I think that, but to me, I put one thing, the downfield passing attack. Can they continue? Cause I'm just going to tell you, you can quit the season. Like you can go home. We can crown Ohio State national champs if they get to the point where they can also take deep shots down the field and consistently hit those. Because, dude, there's too many people that can hurt you all across the field. So let's see. We'll see what that looks like. And if that continues to grow, ooh, buddy.
Yep, I agree. Oregon, what you got for Oregon?
O-line consistency, you know, run game consistency, you know, identity of the O-line being physical. They came in as one of the most experienced crews in the country. They haven't looked like it. They seem very one-dimensional. I think if you gave Dylan Gabriel a little bit more to work with and if you made them stack the box, the RPO game with Tez would be ridiculous. With Stewart would be ridiculous. You'd get more advantageous matchups on the outside. So if they get that run game going, Oregon could be legit.
Penn State. You actually alluded to it, what I wrote down.
I did. I said I want to see him run the rock in big games.
Show up in big games is what I wrote.
Yeah. Own the line of scrimmage. You know, we are physical. We are nasty because that's their slogan. We are Penn State. And, you know, listen, stars starting to align for them, I feel like. USC, don't let this game be a trap game. USC has lost the line of scrimmage consistently in the games this season. Like, and I'm not just talking about the Michigan game. Minnesota beat them up front. And Penn State has to assert their dominance on the both sides of the line of scrimmage, move guys around, stop the run, rush the passer. Like, come on, man, we got a great chance. I love Penn State. They're always in the mix, man. And it feels like this year with everybody kind of, you know, a lot of inconsistencies from a lot of teams, they've kind of been steady outside of the first half versus Bowling Green.
Georgia's at 5. What do you got for them?
What'd you put for Georgia, Mr. Rivals writer?
Okay. I put your quarterback and your offensive line play like what you thought you were getting going into the season. Like,
yep. If
play like top 10 pick, play like a group that had 7 returning players on your offensive line. You're just not getting that right now. The Tate Ratledge injury to me has been actually really big because when Wilson now that center goes down, you're playing your third center. Like him getting returning, asserting themselves in the offensive line, and then back playing like he should. I think that's what they need.
Well, so mine's the same, but I think they need to get healthy because Mikel's been banged up. Brinson's been banged up. Ratledge has been banged up. Morris, like you just said, has been banged up. So I think that they need to get healthy. But I do think when they get healthy and the run game is what it is in Clemson, then Carson Beck can show you that potential. I don't think he's going to show you that potential dropping back every snap. I just don't think that's not where you're going to get the best version of Beck. You've seen him move his feet and make great plays, but we don't need him to move his feet all the time. You need him to be protected, and you need to give your best players. By the way, to me, there's the best players I've seen on Georgia's offense is number 1 and number 3.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I wholeheartedly agree.
Like ETN is an animal.
And Frazier brings a different energy.
That freshman, number 3, is dope. Like Nate Frazier can be that guy. Like he's so good. So if they could get that push up front, some of that creativity, some of that balance, Georgia will be just fine because their defense is good. It's not it's not dominant, and it's not going to be elite, but it's just it's just as good as everybody's in the country.
And it's not going to have – they're not minuses everywhere.
No, and by the way, AJ Morgan is going to continue to grow and get better. Ingram Dawkins is a man child. He's starting to come along. Like, they're going to keep playing young guys that are going to keep growing and getting better throughout the season. Their secondary is going to get more experience throughout the season. Might play different guys at some point too. You know, who knows? But that's what I had for you, Jay.
All right, 6 is Miami. That to me is very clear.
What you got?
Run defense.
Defense in general, I put, you know, defense giving up too many big plays, too many points. If I had to add a caveat in there, it'd also be, hey, Cam Ward, you're freaky. You're good. Stop donating the ball to the other team. Stop putting your defense in a bad spot. But definitely defense for Miami.
Yep. And speaking of defense, that's literally all I wrote for Alabama. Defense. Totality. One word.
Yep. Defense. And I put third down defense. I put third down defense specifically. They were good against Georgia. They really struggled against Vanderbilt. And then too many big plays. Like, look at the Georgia game. Way too many big plays. Vanderbilt, way too many big plays. Alabama, we're used to seeing them be so stingy. But if I want to throw another thing defensively, to me, the pass rush, it's just not great. It's not what we've seen. So couple that with a young secondary, an inexperienced secondary with a pass rush that's not elite. That defense is not going to be what we've seen in years past.
I'm finding a way to play 34 more if I'm them. Yeah. That's one guy who can actually.
He's got some twitch.
Tennessee's next at 8.
I got Nico, which is not what I thought I would say. Like, I did not think Nico would be the thing that was holding them back. But listen, and here's something I want to say about Nico that's important. He's a freshman. So when he goes against Arkansas and they drop 8 and it confuses him, it's going to happen. When you go into a new environment and they show you different looks defensively, which Arkansas did a great job of doing, guess what? Now you put that in the Rolodex and you learn. Like, now I've seen it. I know what it is. So now when I'm discussing the answers on the sidelines, I'm getting those and I'm being able to process in real time and I'm being able to put that to experience. He just doesn't have that yet, man. And so now the most disturbing part about Nico last week was by far, how do you run out of bounds with the clock hitting zeros? Like, the one thing I've always said that I've loved about him from day one was Mr. Flatliner. Mr. Poise. That was a bad judgment call. Like, that was really bad. To run out of bounds and not give yourself a chance to win the football game, whether it's an interception, a deflection, whatever it is, I got to throw that to the end zone. Like, I can't go out of bounds. Or if I'm taking off running, I'm going to run like a man possessed trying to break tackles and get there. I can't step out of bounds. So as much as coming into the season, we thought Nico was going to be great and what he put on tape the first week, he's definitely taken some steps back so far in big games.
My word for them was evolve. I think because of his talents, you have to evolve your offense a little bit to help him. But moving him, play
run
action,
run him, for goodness sakes. I watched the game and I just didn't understand because there's two things that happen when you run a quarterback. One, you show him you're willing to, which opens up the run game elsewhere. And two, sometimes when you get the piss knocked out of you, it straightens some things up in your life. Like, sometimes it snaps you out of that little funk you're in. It's like, God dang, okay, let's freaking go. Like, you get a little pissed off and you get a little something in your tank and you're like, all right, let's go, bring it on. So I think they should have done a better job in the game. They should have ran them more.
All right, Ole Miss at 9.
Offensive explosiveness. Like, I just need more big plays. And without Trey Harris now, your best player, like, where are they going to find those big plays that – those, you know, death by a thousand cuts and then over the top when Lane Kiffin's throwing his clipboard in the air because it's so beautiful. You know, like, I think they're lacking that. Not every other year would have been defense, but this year it's explosiveness on offense.
I wrote third down efficiency.
Well, there you go.
Because, interestingly enough, by the way, they get in third down the lowest of any team in the Power Four. But against better teams, they just on third, we talked about this before, third and long, third and 7+, it's just a struggle for them. Clemson last at 10.
Defense. I mean, this is not the defenses we've seen in the past that pressure you with a defensive line that's just elite among elite and suffocate you on the front. Like they're not dominant. And, you know, you watch Stanford move the ball on them and they make red zone interceptions, but like they give up a bunch of plays and it's easier to drive. They just don't make it super hard on people when they used to in the past. Man, I used to remember watching them they take your breath away, you know, with so many guys that they play, that play fast, that play aggressive, that rush the quarterback, they get TFLs and get sacks and put you behind the sticks. And, you know, Clemson's lacking that.
Bottom fourth in terms of the FBS in most rushing yards allowed, yards per carry, efficiency, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I agree. Struggle bus there for them. All right, that's the top 10. Anybody, by the way, just like if I said, hey, somebody outside the top 10 currently could win the whole thing, is there a team that jumps out to you or not so much?
I love when you do that, when you're thinking like when you haven't thought about that much. So that's hard. But I mean, I would immediately go to 15 to A&M because I love what I saw from Connor Wigman. I think their secondary is getting better. I know their defensive front is a handful. We talked about Nick Scorton last week, by the way, continues to eat people alive and make big plays, which is fantastic. So I see them at 15. They host Texas at the end of the season at home, which is, by the way, there's a good chance they're playing for the SEC championship game. I mean,
I'll say people might take out a second mortgage to pay for tickets for that game.
Yes.
I've seen some pictures on that.
It'll be
astronomical.
It'll be crazy. But no, I don't think that – I think Notre Dame has a chance to be in it. LSU, I think it's kind of cool. LSU, Ole Miss, I feel like elimination game. Like whoever loses is out.
Pack your bags.
Yeah, packs their bags is out of it. But I don't see anybody else outside of that group that's going to make a run and try and get in the playoffs and do damage. Did you have one?
No, I did not. I think this is one where ultimately – the 12-team playoff is going to make the regular season even more exciting because more teams can potentially get in the playoffs. But in the end, when we get down to the Final Four, it will likely be the powers that be.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's okay. But the cool thing is we're going to do this show every week and we're going to do recaps and we got more to talk about, man. Like, because there's legit so many teams still alive to make the college football playoffs. So many teams that – we're looking forward to seeing this week, like Penn State. Like, what are they going to show us? You know, big game, huge showdown with 2 versus 3. We're going to learn a lot about teams. If you continue to like what we put out, man, hit the subscribe button. If you don't, it is no big deal. We will kick rocks. But either way, we will be back here to recap Saturday night to talk about the huge games and what went down.